for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 646 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, Nick Edwards from Stilettos talks about his Kickstarter that's going to be ending very soon. Nick's crowdfunding project for Stilettos will conclude on July 2 at 12 noon, and you can support it until that time. Here's the description. A promising young woman meets the most dangerous game in this 90-plus page revenge thriller graphic novel. We discuss who the various characters are, how they came to be, and what else Nick and the team at Unearthly Comics have coming our way soon. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. A promising young woman meets the most dangerous game in this 90-plus page revenge thriller graphic novel, and it's called Stilettos. And it's available right now on Kickstarter, and I am talking with the writer of this book, and that is Nick Edwards, also known for Gatorman Kills and The Apostasy. How's it going, Nick?
Hey, really good, Wayne. Thank you very much for having me.
It's good to talk with you. We're coming towards the end of your campaign, so this is going to come out and you still see. Let's get the, this is the thing people get on me that I never say soon enough. Well, wait a minute. Your campaign's reached its goal on Tuesday, July 2? Is that right?
Yeah. It's going to, technically we wanted it, we started it on June 1st, mm-hmm. and we just wanted it to go through July 1st. So that'll be when it stops.
Okay. July 1st. Okay. Yeah, that'll be good. Okay. So let's see. Yeah. And as I said before we started recording, there's congratulations in order. You of your $2,000 goal, as we're talking, you have exceeded said goal. So congratulations.
Thanks very much. You know, owe that all to the backers. I mean, we wouldn't. Obviously, we wouldn't have met that goal if not for them. So just hugely in debt to anybody who has supported the project so far.
Well, that's great. Now, I have to ask, and people are always interested when you're doing crowdfunding, how did you attract those backers? What did you do? Were you on social media a lot, or what happened?
Social media a lot, but honestly, just getting to know people in comic book stores, and then, you know, you got to swallow that pride a little bit. And if you've got, you know, friends or family that are in your corner, you know, don't be afraid to ask them, people in your life who hopefully want to see you succeed and follow your dreams and stuff like that. So it's just about tapping into different circles and relying on the people in your life, honestly.
Well, there was a lady who was advising this guy who's a well-known, if I made his name, people probably remember, know who he is, they asked, what should I do about social media? And her advice was, if you're not doing so much social media that you're uncomfortable with it, you're not doing it right. So I found that to be an interesting guy, because so many people think, well, oh, I social media, you know, I should use that very sparingly because I'll aggravate people. But the truth of the matter is a lot of people are coming and going on social media all the time, especially like I've got around 1,000 people on Facebook and stuff like that. And sometimes I don't even see stuff from an individual until all of a sudden I go, holy smoke, they posted that 5 days ago. Oh, no, I missed that.
You know, that is just part of the business, because me and my co-creator on Stilettos, Scott Beecher, the two of us run our own independent comics label that's based out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area called Unearthly Comics. And so we are just a two-man band. It is just the two of us, and the marketing piece and the social media aspect of this whole business is really... I'm just going to be, and it's the game. So you got to do it. You got to play the game. But I hate it. I really, really hate it. I wish I didn't have to do it. Mm-hmm. And, but you know, that's part of it. And so that's good advice. Do it because yeah, that's always my biggest fear is like, oh God, I don't just want to inundate people with, you know, posts, but I guess, yeah, that's what you got to do.
Well, it's funny. I've interviewed Joshua Williamson, who's now a big name at DC. I interviewed him back when he was working at Image doing Ghosted and stuff like that. I talked with him and he said that his profession was 50% doing the actual work and 50% trying to find the work.
Yeah.
Which I found an interesting way to put. Now, of course, he signed a contract with DC. And, of course, now he devotes almost all of his time to actually doing the work, which, of course, he really likes. But for other people, real people, they have to do all this digging and looking around trying to find stuff. So, well, before we dive into the book, you guys developed this company. Was there why did you guys do this rather than go to somebody else?
So Scott started the label. Scott started Unearthly about 6 years before I met him. And when I first met Scott, we decided to collaborate on a project that became our first Kickstarter book, which was a slasher book called Gator Man Kills. And, you know, we did shop it around. We sent it to some different publishers and we just basically got back some thanks, but no thanks kind of replies. And so we were just sort of like, fine, we'll do it ourselves. And so it's been really good. And it was a good decision for us. And so that's now what we've done with these two books was just do it on our own and do it through crowdfunding.
Well, obviously it's been successful because your Kickstarters are working. Is this the first Kickstarter you guys have done?
No, this was the second one.
Second one. Okay, so Gator Man Kills was the first one?
Gator Man Kills was the first one, okay. Yes.
Because I live in Florida, and whenever somebody says gators, I get an instant picture.
Well, this story is set in the Florida Everglades, so that is that's very appropriate.
Okay, because... There's Mike Barron writes this book, and the name of it escapes me at the top of my head, but it's based in Florida. I think it's Florida Man, I think is what it's called. And, you know, when I was interviewing him one time, I was in the middle of it, and he says, you know, if you ever go out on Google or any of these search engines and you just put Florida Man in there, you're going to get the strangest stories you've ever done. And while he was on there, I did it, and I spent about 10 minutes laughing at all the crazy stories about Florida Man and stuff like that. So
if you ever want to take that joke to another meta level, you can just do that exact Google search, Florida Man, and then in your mind, pretend that it's all the same guy. Pretend that Florida Man is just one specific person, and he's doing all of that.
Well, that's kind of what the comic is about.
That's awesome.
Oh man! So anyway, so living in Florida is an interesting experience because everybody goes, "Oh, you live in Florida?" And I said, "Have you seen any gators?" I said, "Well, live ones, not yet." But the good news is I don't get snow either, so it works out fine for me because I never, even though I was born and raised in northeastern Pennsylvania, I never liked snow. So being in Florida is a nice place for me.
Yeah, you chose the right place to go then.
Yeah. Now, okay, let's get to the book and talk about stilettos. Okay, yeah. Let me read a little bit. There's a couple of paragraphs on here I really like about it. It says, "Stilettos is a cat and mouse thriller set during a bachelor party at a lavish, isolated mountain estate. The protagonist of the story is a down-on-her-luck dancer named Jenna, who has been roped into attending the party by her best friend, Tanisha, so she can make some much-needed money. Little do they know, this night will evolve into something much deadlier than a simple party. Jenna and Tanisha will need to rely on their wits and tenacity to make it out of this alive." So that's kind of an interesting thing. Now, one of the things I noticed right away, this is a black and white graphic novel.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Is that – I always ask people, was this for financial reasons or was it because you thought that the story was just – because you're doing like a horror terror type story. Is that better in black and white or was it a combination of both?
So it is a few different reasons why we do black and white, because our Gator Man Kills, our first book, was also black and white. For Scott, who did the art on both books, he prefers black and white. He doesn't really like to bother himself with coloring so much and just focuses on the inks and pencils. And so that's his artistic style. But then also, as you may know, printing in black and white is a fraction of the cost versus printing in color. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like I said, we're a two-man band at Unearthly, and we are a low-cost operator. So that's definitely part of it, too.
Chris, if it takes off, you know, you could always go back, and now we're presenting the color edition.
Yeah, didn't they do that with they did that with Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Those books. And then aren't they doing that with The Walking Dead issue by issue?
Yes. Right now? Oh, yes. I was shocked when the first color issue was like the original story. That what's his name, the guy that came up with that, he submitted Kirkman. Kirkman, he submitted it to Image, but it had space aliens and everything in it. And it was a full color book, and they approved it. And of course, what did he do? He did nothing like that. A black and white book about zombies and stuff like that. So I always get a kick. Mr. Kirkman, I would be careful when, if he tells you something.
Okay, very good to know.
Necessarily buy all that good stuff. So let's talk a little bit. Why is it called Stilettos?
So, fun fact, the original title that we had in mind for it was Heels. And I really liked that title. And as we were talking about this book, a TV show with the exact same title, Heels, came out. I remember right after we had talked about the script and settled on the story idea, mm-hmm. I looked and I saw the trailer for the show Heels and I was like, damn it. And so we had to pivot and choose another title. And so Stiletto can be a couple things. It mm-hmm. can be, you know, a shoe. It can also be a knife. And I think that juxtaposition is really interesting. And the story is a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about characters, because I'm always interested to find out how you chose the characters that you did. Jenna, who is the original, I guess she's the first person it sounds like we meet. She's been roped into attending a party by her best friend, Tanisha. Are these characters based on anybody you know, or are they creations of your imagination?
Yeah, pretty creations of my imagination, but I also wanted them to feel very real. So I feel like people will be able to relate to these characters, because at the end of the day, these are women who are going to work. And then, you know, they find themselves in a situation that requires more than your average workday to get through. And so I think that can be a relatable situation. I think everybody's been down on their luck at some point and kind of been kicked around by life and hoping to catch a break. And I think that's a relatable experience.
Now, you do something that comics, I think, is doing more than ever these days, and that's to have female lead characters.
Yeah.
Did you see? I'll ask people, you know, if you're writing a story about let's say you're a Caucasian gentleman and you write a story about a person of color, mm-hmm. how do you make that person of color sound realistic? As far as like writing women, female characters, did you do research on it? Do you know a lot of women in your life that kind of helped you understand how women function and stuff like that? Because they got to be believable for us to identify with them.
Oh, sure. Sure. So, yeah, no, I'm fortunate enough to say that there are a lot of women in my life. You know, I've got a mom and a sister and aunts and cousins, and then also a lot of women friends. And so I think, you know, having those relationships and just, yeah, anytime I think you are trying to step outside of yourself as a writer and write a character that doesn't, you know, reflect your exact life. The best way to get to understand how a character like that might speak or might act is just, you know, be around people like that and get to know and talk to and listen to, most importantly, people like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I forget the politically correct term these days. Are there not, I want to say women of the night, but I know that's not a...
Oh, so like sex workers?
Yes, that's the term. I can never remember that. Are they sex workers or are they just people who just seem to travel in circles where this kind of thing can come up?
Oh, you know, I think that dancers like the, I think that sex work comes in a lot of different ways, in a lot of different ways. And I think, you know, whether or not somebody else considers them sex workers, I think these are just women who are doing what it takes to get through the day and to pay their bills. And, you know, they're working hard. They're, you see people like that, like whether it's a dancer in a club or, you know, a sex worker of any kind, really, it's hard work. And it is work. It is real work. And so, there's some of that too. You know, I think we've all had those moments when we're at work and we just got to like take a moment to like take a breath and be like, all right, let's keep going. Let's make this money. And so, I feel like that's a fairly universal experience.
Okay. Now, the name Tanisha makes me think that she's a woman of color.
She is a woman of color. And both her and Jenna are both black women.
Oh, okay.
Tanisha is, I think, probably my favorite character in the story. And she plays a really, really cool role. And I don't want to give too many spoilers away. But it was just, it was really, really cool. Because as I was writing the script, I wrote the script originally with a real focus on Jenna, just as like sort of a sole primary protagonist. But then Tanisha, just like as I developed the idea more and more, Tanisha's role just grew in the story, and so she's a really exciting character for me.
So sometimes the characters tell you who they are.
Very much so. Very much so. And that was definitely the case with Tanisha.
Interesting. Now, the way that this is described, it says it's set during a bachelor party at a lavish, isolated mountain estate. And if I understand the artwork, it looks like there's a lot of snowing going on around it.
Yes. Yes.
So how much can you tell us about that? Maybe that's a better thing than me trying to guess.
You mean just about the climate and about the atmosphere of the story?
And the location? I mean, is this like in the north?
We never name where it is. There's no city name. There's no state named. It's in a mountain town. Maybe about an hour or so's car ride worth of travel out of town to get to a remote mountain cabin, more like a manor than a cabin, really. And that's where pretty much all of the core events of the story take place, is on that estate and on that land. It's kind of, you know, mountain wilderness. Yes, covered in snow. It's winter time. We were trying to figure out the story, we just really liked the idea of that setting, since we knew we wanted to do a black and white book from the beginning. So with that, there's lots of opportunity for white on the page with, you know, a snow filled environment. So Scott makes it look beautiful.
Now, they're not the only girls there.
No, there's an entire group of girls who go along. These guys at this bachelor party are pretty big spenders. So there's a whole cast of ladies that go get brought into this situation. But the majority of the story stays with Jenna and Tanisha.
Okay, and the party. It looks like most of the guys that I see in the artwork on the page are not diverse people.
No, actually, and none of them are.
Okay, interesting.
That was a very intentional choice. Mm-hmm. For the nature of the story that we wanted to tell and how these characters interact, and just underlying, you know, social stigmas and how we can play with that. And, but yeah, no, the group of guys, their role in the story really, comes into clarity as the story progresses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't really know somebody until they show you who they are.
Now, okay, back to the girls. It looks like the two main characters, they're the only girls of color, or is that not true?
No, that's not true. It's okay. We have a fairly diverse group of women in terms of ethnicity.
That's intriguing that a group of guys would want women that are largely diverse, or many of them are diverse.
Wonder what would that say about a group of men like that?
Interesting. Okay, is this a bachelor party? I thought so. This is a preparation for a wedding of sorts.
Oh yes, oh yes, holy matrimony.
The way you say that makes me wonder. So I guess we'll find out who the guy is going to be there.
Oh yeah. That's his bachelor party. Oh yes. Yes. The groom. Important to note, that the bachelor party is for the groom, but generally speaking, the bachelor party is led by the best man and is really facilitated by the best man.
Yeah, and that's normal.
Yes, yes. So that there is that dynamic at play.
Now you have there's the one panel called the girls, and the next one's the party, and then we get to the panel called the horror. Mm-hmm. And it looks like there is people being bound. There is a knife, and there's a rifle thing going on. So there's all different kinds of horror going on, apparently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this isn't okay. Do we know who's doing what, or could there be one person behind all this?
It will become very, very clear who does what.
Okay.
Once people things take a turn at this party, and the real situation comes into clarity.
Focus.
Comes into focus. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Comes into focus very clearly. If we go back, the first thing that you read about it, the influences, you said promising young woman meets the most dangerous game. I don't know if you've ever read The Most Dangerous Game, but
no. Sorry.
It's a very famous short story by Jack London, I believe.
Oh,
who I believe, actually, you know what? I'm going to fact check myself. It was a short story by Richard Connell. I've like told a bunch of people that it was Jack London, Richard Connell.
Wow.
Okay. So if you ever, if you're much of a reader, may want to check it out. I think it was made into a movie at one point, but I never watched it, but the story is, very good. Might give you a hint or two as to what's going on here.
Well, if we follow the pattern down the page, after the horror comes the revenge.
Yes.
And let's just say it looks like that is Tanisha I see on there. And let's just say there's at least a couple guns going off on there. So let's just say that bad things happen to them, but that's not where the story ends, apparently.
No. Wanted to... And maybe this says something about me, but I get a very, very perverse satisfaction watching bad things happen to bad people.
Mm.
And so I wanted to do some of that here. So nobody gets away with anything. We'll just say that.
Okay. Now, I because you have the double feature there, Gator Man Kills and Stilettos, is there any sort of crossover between those two books, or are they two separate stories?
They are two separate stories, completely separate tales, characters, and all of that. We wanted to give backers, if there was anybody who, you know, had missed our first book, we wanted to give backers an opportunity to get both if they didn't have the first one. Add a bit of a deal, because normally each of our books cover price is $20, you know, $19.99. Mm-hmm. But we're offering both books together in our Grindhouse double feature tier for $30 total. Hmm.
Now I got to ask, because I have read some books through Kickstarter, and let's just say they don't necessarily come to a satisfying conclusion. Does this book, does the story end, or is that something you can tell us?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
It does end. Okay.
Yes. Scott and I, when we were talking about Stilettos, we came to the decision pretty early on that we just wanted it to be sort of a standalone story.
Beginning. You do realize what a unusual occurrence that is in comics.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. We are actually planning a sequel to our first book, Gator Man Kills. Gator Man Returns. We're talking about what we want to do with that one. So that one, very much open-ended, more to come in that universe. But with Stilettos, yeah, we did just want to tell a pretty straightforward story. One of my favorite pages in the entire book is the last page. And yeah, I think I'm a fan of the ending.
See, the thing that drives me crazy about, but I just got done reading a 4-issue miniseries, and I was into it, and I said, I ordered the fourth book from the company, I got it delivered to me, and it's not the end. Uh-huh. And I'm like, doggone it. Because, you know, the one of the great things about stories that actually end is that everything's up in the air. Mm-hmm. I mean, the two main girls, they may not survive, because this is going to be the end of the story.
They may or may not, but you get a definitive answer.
But I like a story like that, because I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, every issue of Batman is going to have Batman in the next issue. So nothing really terrible, even if something terrible has got to resolve somewhere down the pike, Batman's got to come back. But in this book, Jenna and Tanisha may not come back in another book somewhere down the pike. There may not be a Stilettos 2. So we have to, you know, the good news about that is I don't know what's going to happen. And I like a story like that. I like not knowing what's going to happen. I've read comics for too long, and I know too well the little divergence that can happen at the last panel of the book can be come back next issue, and I'll be like, oh, not again. Mm-hmm. Not that. So this is, you're saying this is a satisfying conclusion we're going to
do. Yes. And, okay. And we had the whole story figured out before I even wrote the actual script. We had outlined the whole story, beginning, middle, and end. We knew exactly how it was going to end from pretty early on.
Again, I must say, you realize how rare this is in comic books.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's cool to have a co-creator. Just Scott and I work very, very well together, and we've even just become very good friends in the process of working together on comics. And so our tastes align a lot, and we just, it was very, very cool to really flesh out this story idea with him.
Because, you know, like mysteries are one of my very favorite things. And they always say, if you're going to write a mystery, you have to know the conclusion when you're writing it, so that you can do all the stuff to get to that place. Uh-huh. So I'm always, this is the way that stories, except in comics, often go. And so, like, if I'm frustrated at all, it's because I read many, many comics. Like, if you read the X-Men, you have to know like 40, 50 years of continuity.
Oh, I know.
Because they're going to pull such a character that was in 40 years ago. It's, you know, Mrs. So-and-so, who we saw back in X-Men 12.
Right.
Why, we haven't seen her in years. And I'm like, X-Men 12. I never read X-Men 12. I don't know
what this is.
So I'm always puzzled. So for me, I like a story. A self-contained story is a great thing, too, where we actually come in and we're introduced to all the characters, and by the end, we get a fair idea of what's going on. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that that is going to be a welcome experience to my this comics reader to actually read a self-contained story. Boy, would that be great.
Well, I am very happy to hear you say that. I'm glad you think so.
Now, there's a line that it describes the story. Monsters don't always look like monsters.
They don't.
And I take from that that the gentlemen who are at the party are they what that sentence is about, or that could that be some of the girls, or is that just something we have to read the book to find out?
Yeah, I don't want to give away too much, but there is a very distinct answer to your question.
Okay, so in other words, don't get too comfortable with the way people are.
Yeah, very very much so.
Because Star Trek Deep Space Nine is my favorite of the Star Treks, and the overall producer used to always say, "Don't get too comfortable. This is Deep Space Nine. Things can turn around in an instant." And I always that made me love this show so much because I had to pay attention at that point. Which I love stories like that, and then like 24 used to be on Fox, and I used to love it.
I was literally just thinking about 24. If you were thinking about shows that you just never know what's going to happen, you never know. Who's going to get killed off? You remember the end of the first season of 24 when his wife got killed?
Mm-hmm.
That was crazy.
I couldn't believe it. You know, they killed the wife of the main character?
Yeah.
Who does that sort of thing? So that I was hooked from that point on. I had to watch that show. And they would do stuff that would drive me crazy. Like one time, there's a girl, she's trying to get away from something, and she's in this car, and they get a stoplight, and this guy in a motorcycle pulls up next to her and looks into the car, and it goes to a commercial. And I thought, oh my gosh, is that guy going to attack her? What's going on? And the next thing that comes back in the commercial, the motorcycle just drove away. And I was like, Oh man. I didn't know what was going on. See, I love that show for just that reason. I never knew what they were going to do, which I love a show like that. Fool me. I tell you, especially if I know how a show like that functions, you know, play with my expectations all you want because I love that.
Me too. I feel like for at least a while, I do feel like Game of Thrones captured some of that energy.
For a while.
If you think back to, you know, Ned Stark getting killed off at the end of season one, that was quite shocking.
Yeah, that surprised me.
And I don't know if you have recently tuned in, but I actually, right before getting on the phone with you, I watched the premiere of season two of House of the Dragon, and which just, I guess, came out Sunday, I think. Have you watched it?
I have not.
Okay. Well, there's some pretty shocking stuff in there. I'm not going to lie.
I got discouraged when it was all about siblings having sex and people having sex on ships.
There is a lot of that.
Okay. Yeah. See, that's, I got a little tired of that after a while. I have to say, I kind of, after a while, thought, well, I wonder what else is on.
You know, I will say if one is not a fan of incest, there are better shows to watch. if you're not super huge on incest.
Yeah, that kind of turned me off to that show.
That's fair. That is fair. It is. I do like the show. I do. Mm-hmm. But it is weird how the show wants you to root for the incest.
Yeah,
it's kind of, that's a little strange.
Not my cup of tea, I have to say. I watched it for a while, but then it got to the place where I would watch it and I'd go, okay, where are they going to have sex now? Oh, in a ship. Okay. And next time, oh, they're in a lighthouse. Guess what they're going to do? Oh, guess what? Okay. I know what's coming. I can go watch something else, or I'll turn on 24 or something like that.
There we go. But what was funny, the weird quirk about 24 for me, because I did like the show for the most part, but with 24, you felt like every other episode, Jack Bauer was torturing someone for like information, and it was always the right thing to do in the show. It was like he never once got faulty info from torturing people. He didn't have, there was like no, the show didn't paint, there was no gray morality with the torture. It was always just like, yeah, Jack Bauer's a badass and he's going to torture you because he's a good guy. And it's that, like, that was a weird aspect of the show to me.
Yeah. Well, there were several things. You know, what was funny was online, there were all these jokes about 24. They used to say that Superman wore Jack Bauer underwear and stuff like that. And all those kinds of jokes bubbled up around the show and stuff like that. So I used to enjoy those kind of jokes as well as the other stuff because, you know, Jack Bauer was this incredible, you know, guy who was able to get anything done, you know, except save his wife. That was one thing he couldn't do. But
yeah, he kind of dropped the ball there with saving his wife. But besides that, yeah, he did. He saved America like eight times.
Well, even got the president of the United States in the fifth season.
Yeah.
That was wild stuff.
Anyway. That was Dennis Haysbert, was it Allstate or Nationwide? He's, are you in good hands? It was that dude who has like one of the best voices. I don't know why he hasn't done more acting jobs, honestly, because he was great in 24 as the president.
Yep. He was wonderful.
President Palmer. Man, I forgot about him. He was, he's killed that.
That was a great show. I do have to say I missed that. But well, maybe one day Stilettos will get on the TV and now maybe the people who produced 24 will turn it into a show.
Hey, that would be pretty cool, man. Maybe one day.
That would be something to see happen because I hate to say it because like companies and especially these days with all these channels and all this content needed for 24-hour-a-day channels, people are looking for new stories and new content and stuff like that. So, you know, if it was me, I wouldn't be hesitant to shop it around and tell people, you know, hey, I got a different story here. I think you'll like this story. It's something a little different. So it might be something to think about.
Yeah. Hey, we're open for whatever. Hollywood, give us a call. Yeah.
There's Adult Swim even on Cartoon Network.
Sure. Yeah. Like oh, my God. Yeah. That. Adult Swim. Call us, please. Yes. We are. I'll pay you money to adapt Stilettos. You don't have to pay me anything. Straight up. I do not care.
I'd be hesitant to say that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself.
So anyway, again, it is called Stilettos, and it is going to conclude. You were saying July the 1st?
Oh, does it say July 2nd?
Tuesday, July 2nd at 12 noon Eastern Daylight Time.
That's kind of funny because I intended to set it as July 1st, and I think I messed up. And once the campaign starts, you can't edit the end date.
Right,
but then,
right.
You know, people just got an extra day. You got until July 2nd. If you are a real laggard,
but don't wait. The thing to do as people often do in these things are refreshing. Oh, nobody's going to back our project ever again. And the good news is, since you've accomplished your goal, that's great. But the thing of it is now is the time for stretch goals. Now is the time for wonderful new things to come on.
Yes.
And so this is the time now that all these stretch goals are going to happen. I mean, sometimes I order a book and all of a sudden I get the package and there's bookmarks and all kinds of other things going in. I don't remember ordering those, but those were because all the stretch goals got met. I, who didn't even know they were coming, got all that good stuff. So this is the great time to jump on board.
You hear that, everybody? Think of the stretch goals. Think of the stretch goals. And we've got some ideas for stretch goals in mind. So, you know, if that number goes up more, that's definitely something we would like to do.
Very cool.
We're very happy just to get funded. I mean, that right there, anything else is just gravy, you know. And because we're funded now, we now have to make this book. Whether we like it or not, it's coming.
Now you've asked me a question. How far along are you in the book?
So Scott is hard at work on the art right now. I would say he's probably somewhere around like 75% to 80% done with all of the internal art. So still a home stretch, still not fully done yet, but he's busting in his butt. I know that he and I talk at least every week. And the goal is to get books into the hands of backers sometime this fall.
Okay, that's good. Well, that's a good time, especially for a snow-covered thing. That's a good time for people to start thinking about snow and things. That's a good
it's Halloween type. Seasonal.
Yeah, it's a good Halloween type. But now, you said the script is done, though, right?
Oh, the script. I finished the script for this back in 2022. The script has been done for a bit, and me and Scott were working on some other smaller projects together, but we've been working in earnest on Stilettos, I'd say, for probably close to a year now, at least. It's just, you know, these things take time, and like everybody else in indie comics, you know, this is a glorified side gig for us. Yep. Both Scott and I have our big boy jobs, and he's got, you know, a wife and two kids, and life happens. So we're just we're making it as we can.
I like to say real life gets in the way of comics.
It does, unfortunately.
Sometimes. And, you know, Chris, this is also a good example of difference between being a writer and being an artist. A writer can say the building collapsed, full page, and then the artist has to draw the building collapsing.
Yep.
And that takes a lot longer than writing the building collapsed.
Two minutes worth of work for the writer equates to probably upwards of like 10 hours, 20 hours of work for the artist. It's a completely lopsided equation. And so that's why I was actually having this conversation with somebody not too long ago. And somebody asked me, they're like, which I don't even like this question, but they're like, who do you think is more important between a writer or an artist? And I, as a writer, I easily think it's the artist. easily. And their job is also so much harder and so much, in my opinion, requires such a high level of skill to do correctly. And so
the terrible thing could be he does the building collapse, he does the page, you say, but that's not what I wanted. I want it to collapse the other way.
Well, you can't, I guess you can't. I don't like to do that. So like I think there's a difference if something is not clear on the page and sometimes, you know, you just need a second set of eyes to tell you that it's absolutely no shot at the artist's skill level, but sometimes just things can't be clear to somebody else that are clear to you. So if that happens, then yeah, of course we'll go back and revise, but comics are inherently a collaborative medium for 90% of us making these, you know, you do get your people who do everything on their own. And I just don't know how you do that, because that's incredible. But for the rest of us, you know, it's a team sport. It's a collaborative medium. So when I finish the script and when I hand it over to Scott, in this case, I know in my head, like, it's not going to be a one-to-one adaptation of what I wrote. Like things are going to get changed. You know, maybe a page that I said was going to be five panels in my script turns out to be four or six. And maybe, you know, he puts the focus on a different angle than I thought. And that's part of the magic of working with a really talented artist and them taking your words and making something really cool with it. Because
But they might come up with something that you never dreamed of.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden there it is on page, you go, I wish I'd have thought of that. And then it gets written into the story because the artist actually came up with the concept and you bring it to life in the script later on down the pike. So there are certain writers who think that every word that drips off their pen of gold has to be exactly the way that they want it or else. And there are smart people who actually say, no, this is a visual medium and they have to work with the artist to make the story work on the page. So I'm heartened to hear people say that we work together.
Well, we do. Scott has been a brilliant co-collaborator from day one on this project. So it's very much both of our baby.
Great. Well, of course, you don't even have to have the same characters. You could have Stilettos too, and do something that has some similarities to this book and do another one. If this one goes over all the way, like we're saying, you've already got your goal. So if it takes off and really does well, do you have any story ideas for a Stilettos 2 in your mind?
I don't think so. Not right now. You know, maybe something down the road at some point. Mm. Maybe I honest to God, I don't have anything specific in mind, but I do know that after we finish this, Scott and I want to go back and revisit the world of our friend Gator Man. So that's that's what's going to be next up for us, I think.
Okay, so we're gonna is he called Gator Man for a reason?
Well, he is a psychotic serial killer who wears an alligator skull on his head, and so it's sort of and he lives in the swamp. And so he's just developed an affinity for maybe some gators, but also, you know, more of an image thing too. He's not a very nice guy. I will say that.
Terror, horror, suspense. That's what it says on the cover.
Yes. You might find some of those in there.
Yeah. Death at sundown. Mm-hmm. There's guys waving guns around and we see the Gator Man. Now, okay, that's probably asking too much. The guy wearing the gator helmet, he's only in the gator helmet, or might he be one of these people towards the front?
He is not. So that story is, so both Scott and I are huge horror geeks, and we wanted to make something that was a tribute to 70s and 80s slasher movies. And so this book is sort of a cross between Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Con Air. And this story is about a prison transport flight that crashes deep in the Florida Everglades. And we've got a small group of survivors, who, you know, are technically escaped convicts, who are just trying to make their way through the swamp looking for a place to crash. And they stumble upon this old mansion deep in the swamp off the map that, unbeknownst to them, is the lair to a horrific serial killer who calls himself the Gator Man. Mm. And so they find themselves. So, yes, he is his own guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, if people want to see the cover, by the way, if you go to the Gator, the Stilettos page, and you go down the page, you will see that double feature, and that shows the covers to both issues side by side. So take a look and see what that looks like. So, interesting thing. I want to ask a whole bunch of questions about Gator Man, but that would be spoilers. And so I won't ask any of that. If you want to know what happens to the Gator Man, buy the book.
Yeah, no, check it out. We ran a successful Kickstarter campaign for that one back in October 2021, and we printed that book. So we officially released that book in spring of 2022. And so it's been out for a couple of years now. And you know what? Spoilers, I think the statute of limitations on spoilers has probably expired for Gator Man Kills. We could get into it, but if we don't have time, then we'll just save it for next time.
I would hate to spoil it for people who haven't actually read the book. I want to encourage people to buy the book. Let's not spoil it here. Let's make sure you buy the book, which you can do through this project, and be sure to get in there and see what happens, because he does have a lot of teeth, that Gator Man.
Yeah.
He's
a pretty nasty customer.
Okay. So there's all kinds of good stuff. Again, it's Stilettos.
Yes.
And you get a promising young woman meets the most dangerous game in this 90-plus page revenge thriller graphic novel. So be sure to get that. And once again, it's going to be Tuesday, July the 2nd at 12 noon Eastern Daylight Time. And be sure to get in there and back it as soon as you can, because you don't want to miss out, because there's all kinds of good things to have, I'm sure. The stretch goals will be plentiful and good things will happen. And this is going to come out right around the perfect time of year for this story. So Stilettos, so be sure to get it. And Nick, it was great talking with you. Much success. I hope that you guys get to do many more things. Before I let you go, though, if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Yeah, so you can our brand, our label, we are Unearthly Comics. And so you can follow us on Instagram at Unearthly Comics. That's where we do the vast majority of our posting, and, you know, send us a DM, say, hey, like I said, it's just a two-man band, so we are just two real dudes. So say hey, don't be shy. And then you can also go to our website. You can order our books directly off our website. If for whatever reason you missed the Kickstarter campaign, you'll be able to order Stilettos off of there too. And that website is simply www.unearthlycomics.com. And that is where we're doing it. So Wayne, just thank you very, very much for having me. It was really great to talk to you, man.
And much success as you go forward. I hope this the Unearthly just blossoms like crazy.
Hey, thanks, man. Much appreciated.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.